Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Doug Hagman flying solo from the offices of the Hagman and Hagman Report, not the studio. I decided to take it to the office. How do you like that? A little bit more informal back here at the office, and it gives you a chance to see me a little bit. Joe's taking the night off tonight. He'll be back, should be back tomorrow. Many, many issues breaking, of course, and not the least of which is the situation in Syria. All right. Now, let me just, I just had it up here, of course. Before we get back to the program, I want to mention that portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by healthmasters.com. If you don't take Healthmasters, if you don't, for example, if you really want some fantastic products, Healthmasters is the place to go for your health. They've got various protocols all set up for you, some named after me, some named after Hodges. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or bad thing, but seriously, Healthmasters is running just a fantastic special. Use the code Doug and the number 5 for 5% off at checkout, for 5% off your entire order. That's Doug5 as a coupon code at healthmasters.com. And, of course, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Anything survival-related, well, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's a fantastic Christian-owned, veteran-owned company. And anything that you would ever want in terms of long-term storable foods, they've got. And we actually we've put the products through a test, and we've eaten the products, and I fed my eldest daughter, or my youngest daughter, the food, and she had no clue it was emergency food. It tastes like normal everyday food. And we snack on some of the fruits, dried fruits and such here as well. All right, where do we stand in geopolitical, where are we in this geopolitical morass in which we find ourselves here with respect to Syria? Folks, have you noticed that one of the biggest threats in the world right now stands in Syria? I mean, is Syria. And I have long said, and you're probably tired of hearing me say this, that World War III will begin in Syria. It's not Iran, not the Arab Spring, but Syria. Now, the Arab Spring was a lead up to what's taking place in Syria. So keep your eyes on Syria. It's all about Syria. All right. Syria, Turkey, they're reaching critical mass. All right. Now, what we had throughout the Arab Spring, when the criminal elements of this cabal began the Arab Spring in, we'll say, the decade of 2010, it was planned years before. However, it was planned by America, it was planned by the UK, by France, and by Israel, by elements of all of those governments and intelligence agencies. That's where it was planned. That's where it got its start. And of course, almost everyone, if you listen to the mainstream media, oh, well, this was the result of the desire for democratic governments all across the Middle East, from Egypt to Tunisia to No. This was the deliberate toppling of various governments to rebalance the power structure. The golden jewel of this restructuring was, in fact, and still is, Syria. Reason being, and I'll just go through this very quickly again, Syria holds tremendous military significance for Russia. The deep water port. Okay, for example, their deep water port. We also have to understand that Syria has the ability to, the land has the ability to act as a conduit for oil pipelines. And once more, oil, money, this is what's behind and ultimately the balance of power. Saudi Arabia has mobilized recently for war in Syria. If you go back to Valentine's Day, you can read the headlines. And I'm just kind of giving a brief recap because it's a complex situation, folks. Most people don't understand it. I barely understand it. And some people will argue I don't understand it. And maybe that's the case to some extent because there are so many moving parts to this. But what it does do, ladies and gentlemen, is it does create this threat, this geopolitical threat that is spawned in a lot of reasons for the has to do with the economy. For example, what happens when the global economy teeters on the brink of collapse? Well, you start a war. We saw it back in the Great War, that being World War One, and of course World War Two, which is more localized with Germany, and then of course you had the Korean police action, Vietnam, and then Gulf War One, Gulf War Two, and other little skirmishes in between. All of these had some level of the impetus for by the bankers. But the really important thing to watch here really began back a week ago now, a little more than a week ago, with the mobilization of Syrian Saudi Arabian assets in Syria. The greatest military mobilization in Saudi Arabian history. It's clear that both Turkey and the Saudi Arabian coalition pedal to the metal. Now, at the same time that the Saudi coalition was mobilizing over 150,000 troops, remember we talked about this last week, which is really two entire army groups, hundreds of tanks, hundreds of trucks, hundreds of military vehicles, along with aircraft, amazing number of aircraft. This exercise called Northern Thunder. It's amazing how quickly these exercises and this news seems to drop from the mainstream. Turkey shelled Kurdish positions inside Syria, and continued to do so. This is pitting the West, that being the United States, Israel, UK, France, really NATO, but especially the U.S., the U.K., and Israel, against Israel. Putin has turned the Russian Air Force loose in Syria, as we saw last week. Russian planes bombing at will all across Syria, any target they decide to bomb, and it's just a matter of time when between the bombs flying from both sides that a U.S. military base is going to be hit, or a U.S. military position is going to be hit, or a Russian military position is going to be hit. All right. Now, if you take a look, and I don't know how many people have done this, and you can search this out on your own. If you think that I'm overstating the importance of this, take a look at the before and after pictures of Syria. And remember the author, and I had quoted him several times, Gajendra Singh, S-I-N-G-H, had written Putin's, I think the article was called Putin's Geopolitical Chess Match in Syria. And this it gives you a good background and understanding of what is taking place. Now, we have trouble in Yemen. The entire Middle East, all right, is on fire. A good website, folks. You can bookmark this website. A good website for clear, very clear and very concise information about the politics and the players of the Middle East is Doug McIntosh, who we had on our program again. His website is doomerdoug.wordpress. He offers some pretty good, now he has a military background, and he's got a small website, but it's very, very pointed in terms of the specifics behind what we're seeing today, all right? For example, I'm just going to touch on this because this is an extremely important moment in time. Back on the 16th, less than a week ago, 6 days ago, Saudi Arabian F-16 warplanes, which were supplied by who? By America, took part in bombing raids in Syria. Now, reportedly, it was against ISIS. This according to the Pentagon. Saudi Arabia participated in ISIS, in airstrikes as part of a U.S.-led coalition against Islamic State militants, meaning ISIS terrorists. This according to the U.S. Department of Defense. Now, hold on a second, though. While it is unclear exactly where the Saudi F-16s dropped their bombs, we know they're officially now engaged in offensive air operations inside of Syria. Given the Russian air superiority over Syria, what do you think is going to happen? And throw in the S-400 missile defense systems. Well, but here's the other part of this. Did you know, folks, and has the mainstream media reported that they also, Saudi Arabia has also dropped some or conducted some air raids over Iraq? Alright, so the Syrian war has extended from Syria into Iraq, all ostensibly to fight ISIS. And Saudi Arabia is part of this. And of course, what we're looking at, and Pastor Paul Begley on Friday had indicated this, is the Turkish Prime Minister wanting, of course, to recreate and re-implement the Ottoman Empire. And it's interesting because McIntosh does talk about this, the New World Order, which is really a hodgepodge of competing groups all seeking to control the world, is inconsistent, if nothing else. It has long used a playbook with three basic points. And think about this. It's a Hegelian dialectic, I suppose. You create the crisis, you provoke the reaction, and then, of course, you provide the solution. And we saw Hitler use this playbook in the with the Reichstag fire, the one that allowed him to assume emergency powers, and his invasion of Poland with all the dead Polish soldiers carefully moved inside Germany to create this media narrative that was false to begin with. I say false or manufactured. Well, Turkey is doing the exact same thing right now with that car bombing of the bus. You recall us mentioning that last week. When you take a look back at this and analyze the importance of this, you know, everyone is looking for this moral high ground, the casus belli. Remember us, all of us talking about casus belli, can we go to war? Is it, you know, do we have the moral high ground? This was relative to Iraq specifically back in 2002. Well, if you look at what happened with the car bomb and that bus carrying the military personnel, the loss of life there, what did that do? Well, it gave Turkey the casus belli to seek the help of NATO, to drag NATO into this under the auspices of fighting terrorism. It gave them a reason to keep the war going, to go ahead and continue shelling the Kurds in Syria. There is unrestricted artillery fire, and there continues to be Kurdish positions inside of Syria. Now, there at the time last week, of course, remember that theft of that nuclear material by ISIS, material that might have been used to create a dirty bomb. All of the pieces for the invasion of Syria were in place. Now, think about that. The New World Order, which is this disparate bunch of competing groups. And when I say that, I also reference, and I keep hitting the microphone if you hear that, I apologize. When you have competing groups, it is kind of like a family fight. And I'm sure those people with huge families, if you ever get together over the holidays, and, you know, there's always kind of some friction. for those holidays. Well, this is what we see with the New World Order groups. It's a fight to see who is on top. And of course, there, the sexual connotations of that, there is a reason for that. All right. But I'm going to leave that alone for now because we're talking about Syria. Again, you've got to create the crisis and then provoke the reaction with, from the crisis and then, of course, institute the solution. So you, that's exactly what happened last week. And to move things along a little bit here to get closer to today, where we are seeing critical mass being reached. If you take a look at the current situation, the crisis continues to escalate despite this appearance of relative calm compared to where we were back less than a week ago. But if you take a look at the broader picture, you're seeing a gradual incremental crisis or incremental pattern of escalation. And you're seeing a lot of things take place that really it's being orchestrated. So now the Syrian the Kurds, the Syrian military and Iran using Hezbollah started a general offensive to close the pocket containing the last link to Turkey. Inside this pocket were trapped remnants of the opposition to Syria's Assad. Under the cover of sustained air attacks by the Russian Air Force, and you got to understand this, the result has been made clear. Turkey understands that they're losing the war, and they're doing anything, folks. They, and this is important to understand. Turkey needs, wants, their desire is to create, recreate the Ottoman Empire. Syria is a part of that objective. Syria is also a part of the Western objective, which is not exactly 100% consistent of that objective. Agenda, but Turkey is trying to drag NATO in. They're attempting to provoke a fight and drag NATO in, meaning the United States in, under the defense pact that we have with NATO, and throwing Saudi Arabia into the mix, which also is Saudi Arabia, the kingdom there, of course, you know, is nothing more than the result of a CIA installation. Anyway, so that's kind of where we're at there, and we need to really watch this. The Syrian ceasefire that was announced, and if you're watching the mainstream headlines, and I guess I said all of that to say this, the Syrian ceasefire, which was announced today, and I do refer back to the writings and analysis of Doug McIntosh being good, very good as, in terms of the military analysis of what's taking place. The ceasefire announced by Russia and the U.S. is a prime example of looking like you are doing something without actually doing anything. In reality, when you look at this, this is a big smokescreen. Normally, ceasefires, and especially in this case, allow both sides to regroup, rearm, and to recalculate. Now, the this ceasefire leaves out ISIS. It has nothing to do with ISIS. And the other disparate Islamic terrorist groups. The Syrians, for example, the Kurds and the Russians, they are not going to recover the now cut off supply, the supply route to Aleppo. There's not in this, no, not in this fashion. It's also unlikely that the Kurds are going to give up any area whatsoever that they now control. So the ceasefire, by its very nature, is flawed. And the ceasefire makes a lot of assumptions which cannot, are absolutely ludicrous. For example, it assumes that Turkey is going to, they're going to stop shelling the Kurds and the Syrian army who are advancing. That's not going to happen. That's akin to saying, well, we're not going to, we're just go ahead and, you know, we're seeing you advance on us and we're not going to do anything about it. On the other hand, it will allow the Kurds, Syria, and Russia to claim victory, kind of save, not save face, but to claim victory. And again, we're talking about a moral high ground and more of an ideological aspect of things. It's going to further isolate the Prime Minister of Turkey, Erdogan in Turkey. He's going to be faced with a choice between either accepting a Kurdish state, which, don't forget back in 2003, 2004, 2005, remember the discussion of splitting up, and how many people remember the splitting up Iraq into the Sunni, Shia, and Kurdish regions? Well, ultimately, that's where we're headed here. That includes a swath of Syria. So, the bottom line with all of this is this merely is a smoke and mirrors with this ceasefire. So when you hear this ceasefire on the mainstream media, don't believe, I mean, you cannot believe what they're talking about, or you cannot believe what they're saying. This is not a ceasefire. This is only going to escalate, and it's only going to drag the United States into it. And of course, much of the fuel that we're seeing right now, many of the armaments that we're seeing right now at play in Syria and Iraq and throughout that area, folks, are documented in the emails of the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. If you see why we're never going to see the emails, and the reason that we're not going to see the emails, and the reason that Hillary Clinton will never go to prison, will never see the inside of prison, because for her to be charged would open up the complicity, illustrate the complicity, the bipartisan complicity that includes the highest members of Congress, and that includes the Gang of Eight. All right. So I just want you to know that, because yes, Obama has blood on his hands. Hillary has blood on her hands, stemming from Benghazi. This operation was to arm the anti-Assad terrorists with the approval of the Gang of Eight, and that includes the speaker way back when, John Boehner and such. So everyone has blood on their hands. So you're never going to see at all. You're never going to see Hillary or the full story about Hillary Rodham Clinton and about those emails. All right, folks. Now, let me check, and I had given out our email address here, that's studio at Hagman and Hagman.com, and anyone who wanted to write in and to discuss anything or talk about, there we go, talk about, ask any questions. I was going to take go ahead and questions. Karen, well, this is easy. Karen wants to know if we're going to bring our studio dog to Dallas now, and she's going to be visiting relatives here. Deborah M. writes, "What can we do? What can I do to change the emphasis of the NDAA and alternative media?" That's a great question, and here's, in talking with a couple of people today, and this applies to everything. I was talking to Vince Finelli, as I mentioned earlier, and for those joining us for the second hour, I should point out that we have scheduled Chris Ann Hall, constitutional attorney. We have scheduled for tomorrow Tom Hoffling of the, he's a presidential candidate for the Constitutional Party. And believe it or not, folks, you know, has a good chance of being on the ballot on all 50 states. In fact, is on the ballot right now on most of the states. Don't count out a third party run of this type. Don't, because I believe in our audience, and it only take 5-10,000 of listeners to actually fill in off of his website support a pledge of support, that is, not monetary, but a signature, if you will, a digital signature, to really give him some good traction and give that party some good traction. So it's very interesting. And to those Christians who are saying, well, how can, you know, what can I do? Or if I can't, I can't vote for Trump in good conscience as a Christian, I can't vote for Hillary, of course. So who do you vote for? I'm just not going to vote. Well, we have an alternative, and he'll be joining us tomorrow. So, but Deborah M., what can we do as a group or a person? And Dave Hodges and I are going to be talking about this, because we do need not just to tell you what the problem is, because you know what the problem is, but how do we fight this? And especially when the clamps come down on the alternative media, and they will, against us, and those people who are also doing this on a social networking. If you've got a large social networking following on Facebook or on Twitter or on YouTube, many people that I come in contact with on a daily basis have tens of thousands of people who follow them on Facebook or on the YouTube, and make YouTube specials. Folks, you're just as much a target as we are. What can you do about it? Well, we've got some, Dave Hodges and I are going to explain what you can do about it. All right, let me get back to some. I've got somebody here going through your emails. Thank you. If you want to send an email, it's studio@HagmanandHagman.com, or just go to HagmanandHagman.com and go ahead and click on the contact us form, and you can send an email directly to the studio. Now, some other news that's extremely important. We've got, Eric, how you doing? You want to say anything, Eric? Eric just walked into the office. All right. There's so much, again, there's so much to get into, folks, and, I'm a little bit off my game right now as I speak. I'm kind of going through so many headlines, and they're coming through. What's trending right now? Will there be a false flag, for example, to justify a massive ground invasion of Syria? This has come up a couple of times. This has come up, as a matter of fact, this is one of the most asked questions. Now, Michael Snyder wrote about this in his website, and I cannot read what his website is. I'm sorry about that. But look, folks, all throughout history, we have seen that governments have staged attacks. So we've seen that. That's okay then, right there. Sorry about that. We're good, right? All right. Meaning this, right? Meaning I can do that. Okay. All right. Throughout history, governments have staged attacks. Sorry, we had to take care of some business here, and I was just getting handed some papers. And, of course, my wife, camera shy, did not want to be a part of that. We've seen a number of false flags. And, of course, the false flags are blamed on the enemies. Now, the kinds of attacks, like these false flags, they justify military action. Now, if you look at Wikipedia, for example, they define a false flag, the contemporary term false flag, they describe it as covert operations that are designed to deceive in such a way that the operations appear as though they are being carried out by entities, groups, or nations other than those who actually planned and executed them. Now, how many people, and I've talked about this before, but we've got new listeners, how many people know what happened back in March of 1968? Let me see a show of hands. Go ahead. No one's raising their hand. Okay. Well, the Glomar Explorer. Does that give you any hint? All right. March of 1968, there was a sub that went down. Okay. It was a Russian submarine. Now, I'm going to be exact on this. Let's see here. And this is so important in the course of history. The Glomar Explorer actually was a Howard Hughes spy ship that actually lifted up a Soviet sub 129 that was lost at sea. You see, on March 8th, 1968, there was a submarine. Here's the official story. March 8th, 1968, the submarine USS Barb was on a mission secretly monitoring shipping activity near the Soviet Union, near one of their largest naval bases in the Pacific. Well, suddenly, five Soviet submarines came racing out of the port at full speed. Subs were supposed to, of course, be stealth, and these were anything but. They were noisily pinging the ocean floor with active sonar and repeatedly diving and resurfacing and diving and surfacing. Well, it was clear that they were looking for something. And a dozen surface warships joined in the hunt. Radio communications between the ships was frantic, unencrypted. Which was really another indication of the search. So what was going on March 8th, 1968? Well, the Soviet sub K-129 reportedly went down. Well, it did go down in the Pacific, not too far from Pearl Harbor. All right. Now think about this. Here's what we're told. This was a nuclear sub, the K-129. It went down in the Pacific. It was loaded with, it had a nuclear warhead. And there was a reported explosion of this sub. And you can read all about the official story of the K-129. And then you can read all about the official story of the Glomar Explorer, which was a Howard Hughes / CIA recovery vessel. What was the real story? To me, folks, based on information I've received from my sources, this was the mother of all false flags. A false flag that went sideways. And folks, you've heard me talk about this before. But imagine this. Just imagine a city like Honolulu being laid to waste by a nuclear missile. All right? Humor me for a moment. Then imagine China being blamed for this bombing, unprovoked bombing of Honolulu. You follow me so far? That is the mother, to me, of all false flags, especially when you consider that it would be a Soviet K-129 submarine that actually would have fired that nuclear missile, to have it blamed on China in order to create a war between the United States and China. So there was this frantic effort to recover the K-129. Well, the United States commissioned Howard Hughes, the Hughes Tool Company, to design a 50,000-ton ship, 618 feet in length, twice as long as the K-29, to recover, to actually do the lifting of the K-129 sub. But here's the issue, and you can look at this, and folks, you can research this under the term Project Azorian. What happened not only with a K-129, what happened with the recovery depends on who or what you believe. You see, the real story, and I believe one that will be borne out in history, is that the K-129 Russian sub was in the process of firing a nuclear missile at Honolulu, and ultimately would have blamed that attack on China, and then there would have been increased tensions. And don't forget the time period that we're talking, that during the height of tensions in Southeast Asia, the Vietnam War. Don't forget about that. But who would have benefited from that? And that's the question that you've got to ask yourself. Who benefits from this? Of course, in this case, Russia would have benefited from this. Mother of all, in my view at least, false flags. So let's bring this mother of all false flags into relevancy today. Remember, we spoke of last week the bomb attack that killed 28 people in Ankara. That might just very well have been an example of just such a false flag attack. Well, sans any nuclear warhead. It's entirely possible that the North Koreans or the Syrian Kurds could have been responsible for the bombing. However, it would seem at least as likely as the Turkish government may have set it up to blame the Kurds. I guess what I'm saying, and citing the article by Michael Snyder, I'm saying, look, folks, the next explosion or the next biggest event that you see take place, especially in the Middle East, especially in Syria, don't believe for one moment the official narrative until you do your own research. Because the Turkish prime minister had blamed a Syrian Kurdish militia fighter working with the Kurdish militants inside Turkey for this suicide bombing, this homicide bombing. And then he vowed retaliation in both Syria and Iraq to eventually widen the war. And of course, I'm referencing a car laden with explosives detonated next to this military bus as they waited, as they waited in traffic lights near Turkey's Armed Forces headquarters, the parliament and government buildings in the administrative heart of the capital city there. Now, the attack, according to the Turkish prime minister, was clear evidence that the Syrian Kurdish militia had been supported by the United States in the fight against the Islamic State, northern Syria. And of course, you're looking at the McIntosh had said, the provocation and of course the result, right? So prior to the attack, it would have been difficult, for example, for Turkey to have the moral high ground to justify sending in troops into northern Syria to fight the Kurds. They couldn't do it. Just like the Liberty, just like the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I mean, how many of these do we have to see before we understand that we're being gamed? So, looking back at what Michael Snyder wrote, of course, now we're seeing the president of Turkey saying that his nation has all the justification that it needs to do whatever it wants inside Syria. Isn't that just fabulous? To fight the threat that it faces, Turkey has the right to launch any kind of operation in Syria and wherever the terrorist organizations are located. Isn't that what we said as well, going back to Afghanistan, Iraq? Isn't that what Lindsey Graham had said? And to bring it even closer, still closer home, to home, isn't that what the NDAA is about? And I do suggest, I submit, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. The Russians, the Iranians, Hezbollah, they're already inside Syria. They're helping the Assad regime to fight the Sunnis. And this is where it gets really, I mean, if your head doesn't feel like it's going to explode, then you're not really trying to understand this, in my view. But you've got the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah to fight the Sunni, to fight the Sunnis that are being backed by Saudi Arabia and Turkey. And who do you think is backing them but the United States by proxy? So you've got Russia and the United States and the proxies in between. Some are fighting, you know, between themselves, and but ultimately at both ends, holding the bookends, shall we say, are Russia and the United States. Now, my question to you, to think a little bit larger than this article and others are promoting, just consider this. What would happen if a United States military base was attacked in Syria? And blamed perhaps on Iran or Hezbollah. What would happen if we had a vast loss of life there? Well, could that be the spark that could begin World War III? My point is that World War III has already begun. It's all just yet for the bombs to be flying. If Turkey and Russia went to war and NATO stayed on the sidelines, folks, the NATO alliance would, people would look, leaders would look at the NATO alliance and say, what's that even about? It should be pointed out that the NATO treaty does not obligate the United States or any member country to support Turkey in a war that Turkey starts, or wouldn't, or anyone, for that matter. If the United States goes out and slaps the heck out of, I don't know, just for an example, Iran, the other NATO countries don't have to jump in the fray and help the United States because we started it. But in a defensive posture, it obligates NATO countries to step in and fight using their military assets. So what I'm saying is this. Not only are we seeing the run-up to World War III in this case, in Syria, and we've been seeing it for years, but we're also seeing the perfect false flag, and I dare say, in my view, a repeat of the Soviet K-129 sub-event back in March of 1968, where there was, and you believe this, if you want, if you don't want to, then toss it aside. But the information that I believe took place, that was actually part of Johnson's, the reasoning behind Lyndon Johnson saying, look, I'm not running for re-election in 68. I'm done. I mean, you know, the icing on the cake was knowing that the K-129 sub, Russian sub, fired a missile. That missile blew up in the tube, taking down the submarine, but the intent was to take out one of the cities in Hawaii, blame it on the Chinese, and exacerbate the war in Southeast Asia. And to cover, and as an additional part of that, an extension of that, to cover up what really happened, the United States, had to build a specific ship to go and call the Glomar to go out and pick up the K-129. That's kind of like the model of the mother of all false flags. But we're seeing this take place in Russian, or with Russia, with Turkey, with the United States, with Israel. And watch it as well. And one more thing about Israel. It's not mentioned a lot, but Israel, their government, please don't blame me. Don't say, oh, you're anti-Semitic or you're anti-Jewish or whatever. No. It'd be like saying, well, you're anti-American when you say that Clinton, for example, lied and should be in jail. No. There are components, there are elements of the Israeli government that are involved in some pretty nasty espionage type activities. And in this case, they want to see Assad gone too. Just understand that. They've got an interest in seeing Assad gone. So the bottom line with this, and the reason I spent a lot of time on this, is one day I believe that even against the so-called ceasefire or the cessation of hostilities, at least right now, you're going to see an event take place over there that will cost the lives of many either Americans or our allies or a combination of both, that will serve as the impetus, as the moment to spark in this World War III. But the other part of this as well, and looking at this from all perspectives, and man, I was attempting to really get into the do a lot of research on this. We have to also understand that the economic interest must be served in any kind of military action. So if there is to be a military action that is planned, as the perfect Hegelian dialectic, of course, well, then what we need to understand is that that won't happen until the economic interests are fully ready for that to take place. And how will that affect the United States? Well, it will affect the United States in a number of ways. Most significantly, it will be a blow to our petrodollar, our U.S. reserve currency, or currency as the global reserve currency. All right? But this goes back to oil prices. Oil prices, low oil prices, it's an assault, an attack, a war against the Russian economy. Low oil prices benefit the United States, but they hurt Russia. Why are we seeing, what has changed between 2009 or 8 when the gas prices were at $4, almost $5 a gallon versus today? You may argue, and perhaps correctly, that there's additional drilling, but that's on federal lands. But while that by itself sounds correct, you also have to discuss the lift costs of oil, meaning the cost, what it takes to get it out of the ground. While we may be getting more oil from the ground, it costs more, so it stands to reason that we shouldn't be seeing the oil prices that we're seeing. What we are seeing is a rigged game or a rigged commodity price, like we see in the precious metals, but in this case, as an instrument of asymmetrical warfare against Russia. I hope you understand that. I hope I made that clear. And if I didn't, my apologies. But that's extremely important. And I want to mention, too, I got an email from Ted Brower. He had talked about this very subject and others about the medical martial law, but also the geopolitical aspects of things on Friday's show. And Friday, as well on his program, he had Dave Hodges on as a guest. So there's two different shows, two different programs I would urge everyone to re-listen to. And that is the Ted Brower and Austin Brower show on Global Star Radio Network from Friday, and also his appearance on the Hagman and the Hagman Report Friday, as well as this and these and other topics are really discussed. And it was a very important show, so please, you know, bookmark that. But getting back to what's taking place in Syria, what we're seeing here is the run-up to a big event, and this more than likely will be a false flag event. And who's going to be behind it? The globalists are going to be behind it, of course. And we are going to be essentially in a world of hurt. And a lot of, you know what, folks, a lot of people are going to look at these events and say, oh my goodness, you know, we were just attacked, or this just happened, and they're going to be outraged. Think of the World Trade Center, but on a regional scale. Think of that, but on a regional scale in Syria and elsewhere. So that's very interesting. I don't know how many people have heard about this as well. I had marked this for discussion. there was an assassination attempt on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that was averted. Have you heard about this, folks? There was a Hamas terrorist cell operating out of Jerusalem that had been planning a mass casualty attack with the added goal of assassinating Netanyahu. Now, this was reported in the Hebrew language news site Walla yesterday. Indictments were filed a month ago, but this is just coming out that, hey, this was in the works, and the details were only recently cleared for publication. Folks, the cell consisted of 6 members, directly supported by operatives in Gaza, and there were numerous cell leaders that were living and operating, working in Jerusalem. And why is this important? Why should we care? Because what we're seeing, the product of this open non-assimilation of Islamic terrorists, basically, in Israel itself, but we're seeing it here. So the reason this is important, they covered this up, or they withheld the information about this Netanyahu attempted assassination combined with a mass casualty event. They withheld this information. But it's important to understand that, pending their investigation, by the way, and the additional arrest, but it's important to understand that it can happen here. And it is being planned here because we have already, when I say it's being planned here, more than likely is being planned here because of all of these terrorist cells in this country. One thing I wanted to mention quickly, the Muslims of the Americas, which I had written extensively about, are becoming more active again. I've been getting some information that the black Muslims in this country are now responding to a recruitment drive, if you will, by the Muslims of the Americas, which their front group is the International Open Quranic Institute University. Their headquarters being in Hancock, New York, and their heyday back in the early 80s, they had 35 or so compounds. Folks, that's not the case anymore. Their operations have changed. So when you see these maps of these compounds of the Muslims of Americas where there's paramilitary training taking place, that had changed after we, and I say we, I'll take credit for this, we had conducted surveillance and offered to the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security our surveillance product, which showed paramilitary training at not just the headquarters of the Muslims of the Americas, but some offshoots. And of course, other places had taken that information and published it in various books, and that's fine. Dr. Paul Williams actually wrote a book about that, about our investigation, and about the Muslims of the Americas, and used a good part of our investigation for information in his book. But the fact of the matter is, the FBI got that information and did nothing with it. So now, these terrorist organizations, ladies and gentlemen, have broken up in terms of they're not out there in encampments anymore. Now they're spread out all across mosques and training centers in urban areas. That's what happens. That's what happens can you tell I'm frustrated with that? That's what happens when nothing is done and evidence is given. Evidence that there is, in fact, a threat. Islamists being managed by the globalists in this country, by the criminal cabal. Folks, going to be right back with our guest, Dave Hodges. Ooh, hang in there. It's going to be good. Next hour.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.